All right, this is Gary Parrish again, and this is the Eye on College Basketball podcast again. And I'm talking to you now on the morning of January 13th, which obviously makes this Monday the 13th. And because it's Monday, joined by my colleagues at CBSSports.com, as usual, Matt Norlander and Jeff Borzello. Fellas, how are you on this Monday the 13th?
I am terrific. Thanks for having us on as you do every Monday.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
Hey, listen, I am terrible at picking college basketball games.
I'm okay. Awesome at it. I'm not going to lie.
They're having us do this every Friday. Guys, I am absolutely miserable at this.
What did you guys do this past weekend? I don't even know. I didn't look at it.
I was 8-2 against the spread. I'm 28-12 ATS on the season.
Jesus. That's a lead that, like, we're not going to be able...
No.
We're not going to catch you.
I'm making people millionaires.
You're doing something. What are you, Norlander? I think I'm better than you, but I'm nowhere close to that.
You're better than me, dude. I'm nowhere
close to that. Seriously, 28-12, if you can go just slightly, like these professional handicappers, they try to hit like 60% or something. Like if you're going 28-12, you're doing something serious.
Dude, I'm making people wealthy.
I hope you are.
I hope I am. I hope somebody's using my picks.
No, I hope you're using your picks. Supplement that income.
The thing is, I don't trust myself. I think next week I'll probably go like 1-9. So,
that is the way sports gambling
goes. Pendulum always swings the other way.
Sports gambling is the funniest thing because the way it works is it's a little bit like sitting at a never-ending blackjack table. Like you can't ever really win at it. You can only hope to not lose that much.
Yeah,
to not lose that much. Like that's the goal, to not lose that much. Because, you know, like if you go to a casino, you sit down at a blackjack table, you play for an hour, you play for 3 hours. There could theoretically be this run you go on, and then you walk away for whatever reason, because you're smart enough to walk away, or because your wife's making you leave, or because your buddies are ready to go, or because it's time to go to dinner, or you're going to a show, or whatever. But there's like, or you're just exhausted. You've been there 12 hours, or you got work tomorrow. There's a variety of reasons where the night has to end or the gambling session has to end. So you can, if you're up at that point, then you walk away with that. And unless you're like either a professional gambler or an addicted like scumbag gambler, you're probably not going to be back anytime soon. So you can call it a win. With sports gambling, particularly with how easy it is these days, with everybody having a website, you just go to the website, you punch in, blah, blah, blah. It's a 365 day a year, like you're sitting in a casino essentially. And so, you know, a lot of people, I guess, don't gamble on baseball, but you've got football season to college basketball season to the NBA season, and that runs you through like June, and then you get taken. So my point is, you never stop gambling. Like you always go on action, and you start out gambling like $100 a game, $200 a game, and if you get up, you don't cash it out. You know what you start doing, right? You start betting $300 a game or $500 a game or whatever the numbers be. It could be you start out 25, and next thing you know, you're betting 50. But it's always funny to me. People are like, you know, oh yeah, I think I really know sports. I'm going to try to. No, you're not. You are never going to walk with money. You can entertain yourself, and if that's the goal, to try to entertain yourself by giving yourself a financial interest in the game, then that's fine. Knock yourself out. But if you think you're going to walk away, like I won $15,000 this football season, that is not the way this stuff goes.
I have a few buddies who gamble. One won like $4,000 on the NFL last year, and now this year he's down like $3,000. So it always happens. And I've got a few, I don't know if you guys have this quote unquote problem, but I've got a few guys that gamble, and so they will ask me what I think about college. And I tell them, guys, I'm too close.
Right.
Like, I do not help you. So they will ask me, and I will say, okay, here's what I think. And I'm telling you, like, it's a special skill to be this bad, bad.
I didn't realize I had this many friends that gambled, because I've tweeted out my record a few times. I've had friends come out of the woodwork that like apparently are like degenerate gamblers, and like, oh, I saw you went 8-2. What do you got for me tonight? I'm like, whoa, man, like I have nothing for you tonight.
The only time I actually think it makes sense for somebody to ask me for a college bet, like, what do you think about, Iowa State and Kansas, you know, or something like that. I actually think that makes sense if you would ask me, because in theory, I should.
You should know.
I should know. Well, listen, not enough to like, you know, at the end of this stuff, like, there aren't odds makers who, quote, know stuff. It's all statistical formulas. And, I mean, as we know, you can basically go to the Sagarin ratings or the KenPom ratings and look at the projected final scores of any given game, and that's about where the point spread's going to be. So, you know, the bookmakers are using something very similar to what KenPom uses or something that Sagarin uses. And so, like, I'm not smarter than that. You know, I'm not smarter than those formulas. But I could have some insight somewhere, like, well, DeAndre Kane, like, you know, he's actually going to be perfectly fine. People don't know that yet, but he's going to. I'm not saying he is. I'm just saying in theory he could be.
Right.
So, like, what makes me laugh is because I'm a, quote, sports writer, I will have friends constantly asking me for, like, so who you think is going to go to the Super Bowl, you know, or like, you know, what do you think about this college? That's where I have no more insight than anybody else.
Right.
And so I'm like, I don't know who's good at football this year. Like, I don't know who's going to play in the Super Bowl. Is Peyton Manning still playing? Yeah, maybe him then. Like, so it's funny when you get this sports writer label, people, you know, people rely, they think that you somehow.
You're like a guru on everything.
Yeah, well, no, you know, all we do is tell stories. You know, we tell stories and we have opinions on a very specific sport typically, but the idea that I have some insight into you know NFL odds is a little silly, particularly if Peyton Manning's gonna let you get backdoor covered the way he did yesterday. That guy, that guy. Look, if you're up 17-0, you can't cover the stupid spread against Phillip Rivers.
It seems this you're speaking with something of a pierced skin there, GP.
So frustrating, so frustrating. To get backdoor covered like that. All right, this is the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. So let's talk some actual basketball. I think the biggest development, at least in terms of wins and losses from yesterday, which was Sunday, was Iowa winning at Iowa State. If you remember, it was just I think a week earlier on a Sunday night where Iowa seemed, I don't want to say on the verge of winning at Wisconsin, but certainly positioned to win at Wisconsin. Fran McCaffrey gets a double tech. He gets ejected. Wisconsin ends up closing pretty strong. They win that game. And then Fran is suspended for a game. Still, Iowa goes out and pounds Northwestern. But what I thought, and I actually talked about this with Eric Principal from USA Today on the podcast last Thursday, there was another night, maybe it was Tuesday night, Wednesday night, I'm not sure what the night was, but I watched Wisconsin just destroy Illinois. And I know Illinois is not great, and I think we probably know that more today than we knew even back then, but it was just the way they dismantled them. And I came away from that game thinking, okay, if Iowa almost handled Wisconsin at Wisconsin, and Wisconsin's basically beating the hell out of everybody else, like, how good is Iowa? Is Iowa maybe better than we realize? And then, you know, they knock out Northwestern easily and then go to Ohio State and win. So now they're sitting here 14-3. Their only losses are to Villanova, Iowa State, and Wisconsin, which I think are three of the top six teams in the top 25. And one of those losses was on a neutral and overtime to Villanova. The other two losses were on the road in true road games, and all the losses are by five or fewer points. So let me just, I'll start with you, Norlander. Is Iowa a legitimate threat to not only be good, because I think we knew they'd be good, to like win the Big Ten and maybe go to a Final Four?
Oh, yeah. I was writing yesterday that they're a Final Four dark horse, but maybe dark horse actually is being a little too unkind because, as you say, I mean, they're one of those teams, they have not been to the tournament in a while, so nationally, they just kind of hover. It's just Iowa, there's a certain blandness to them, I guess. But
Well, no, it's that. I think it's that, and I think it's like, ask any casual college basketball fan, you ready for this? Name me two Iowa players.
Right.
You can't do it.
Right, yeah.
Like they have a bunch of, they don't, even like Ohio State's got Aaron Kraft. Everybody knows Aaron Kraft. And Iowa State at this point has DeAndre Kane, so people know DeAndre Kane. Like, I don't think the average college basketball fan, like, I got buddies who host radio shows in Memphis. I think if I called them right now and said, name me two Iowa players, I don't know that they could get one.
I agree with that, and that goes a long way. Now, Devin Marble, he's averaging, like, I think 16-something a game. He'll probably be a first team All Big Ten guy, I would think. He's their best player. Jared Uthoff, he's the guy, remember, that Bo Ryan got into a lot of trouble with because
Sure. He
wouldn't let him transfer to Iowa back an offseason and a half ago. He's being an impact player. Overall, it's a solid team with decent depth. They are certainly worthy of a top 10, which GP, you've got them, what, 7 or 8 now?
I got them 7 right ahead, right behind.
Which is totally fair.
Of course. When you look at their resume, this is what I always try to tell people because I would, every once in a while, like people, even though like the advanced statistics suggest Villanova is genuinely a top five team, like they're fourth at KenPom. I you know, people would always question me about where I've had Villanova ranked because I've had them up there basically since the trip to the Bahamas where they knocked out Kansas and knocked out Iowa. And I would, my answer is always, I'm not trying to, I don't know if they're really that good, but I know what they've done to this point suggests that's where they ought to be ranked. And what Iowa's done to this point, no losses outside of the top six in the top 25 and one, and then getting that win yesterday. Like, Iowa deserves that ranking. I don't know if Iowa's really the seventh best team in the country, but they deserve that ranking.
They've got a great offense. They're top five in efficiency, top 10 in points per game. And their losses, the close ones, you know, to Villanova in overtime, put up 83, put up 82 at Iowa State. You know, the Iowa State and Wisconsin both were undefeated at the time. Wisconsin obviously still is. And those were both road games. So certainly can win the Big Ten. I would still probably lean Michigan State right now, but it's really close. And this has just been a long time coming. It was Iowa's first win over a top five team since 2001. And Fran McCaffrey's temper tantrum has a way, obviously, of kind of overshadowing what kind of job he does as a coach. He's a really good coach, but I think the more they can win and move past that, people will see this Iowa team for what it is. And certainly this team can make a Final Four. They have the offense to do it, and the defense also is extremely solid.
Borzello, you got Michigan State, Wisconsin, Iowa, basically consensus top 10 teams at this point. Ohio State, listen, they've obviously lost two straight at this point, but they're still seventh at KenPom. And then Michigan, even without Mitch McGarry, is still top 20 at KenPom. And Minnesota's better than I think most people realize, top 40 at KenPom. What do you make of the Big Ten? Is it undeniably the best league in the country right now?
I think so. I think going into conference play, I think the Big Ten and Pac-12, Big 12, we're kind of all there. I think the Big 12 and Big 10 still have a good contest, but I think the Pac-12's kind of fallen. But the Big 10, they're top four. You can make a case that they're all top eight teams nationally. You know, with Wisconsin, Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa, even though Ohio State's lost a couple of games. But in terms of the Big 10 race, I think the key going forward for Iowa, they've already gotten two of these really tough road games out of the way. They've already played at Wisconsin. They already played at Ohio State. Their next three games against the Big Four in the Big 10, so to say, are all at home. And I think that gives them an edge. You know, Wisconsin has most of their big games at home too. But you know, they've gotten two of their maybe three or four biggest games, biggest road games in the Big Ten out of the way already, and they're still right there. I do worry a little bit about Ohio State going forward. I had them in my midseason Final Four, and I kind of regret that just because they've had a tendency the past two games to go through these long offensive droughts, and it comes down to basically LaQuinton Ross, and it's really hard to rely on him for 18 points a game consistently, and then when he's not scoring, they have to rely on guys like Shannon Scott and Lenzel Smith and Sam Thompson. Those guys are good, but they're not good enough to carry, you know, a Final Four Big Ten champion offense.
I think Ohio State, and I actually thought I've thought this even in the preseason, but then they start undefeated and they really didn't beat any high caliber opponents. But still, like, you know, people are sort of dismissive sometimes of teams that, you know, oh yeah, they've got a nice record, but who have they beaten? Yeah. But like, we see every weekend, like, it's, you know, not losing to bad teams is actually an accomplishment. Because teams,
I so agree with this, yes.
Yeah, because like, teams lose to bad teams all the time. So you sort of had to, A, because it's Thad Matta, like, the guy never has a bad team, and like, quite literally never has a bad team. But I guess my point is this. I thought the preseason that Ohio State might be one player short. I think they're one player short. I think they're one guy who might be better than LaQuinton Ross, or at least equal to LaQuinton Ross, short of being really, really, really good.
Right, someone you can count on for 15 to 17 points if Ross isn't making his shots like he didn't against Michigan State, and they almost won that game. So I think that game kind of, you know, maybe fooled me a little bit more into saying, all right, well, they didn't play well offensively. They played bad for 30 minutes or whatever, and they still almost won in overtime at Michigan State. But I still think you're right. I mean, if they had that consistent second scorer that you can count on for 15 points a night, I think, you know, they would have, or they would be a better bet to make the Final Four.
Real quick, Norlander, Wisconsin's sitting here at 16-0, and every once in a while, you're still going to get somebody on Twitter talking about how they're boring or how they're, you know, painful to watch. I actually think they're the opposite of all that stuff. I just enjoy, obviously, like, you watch that UCLA-Arizona State game last night or that Creighton-Xavier game last night. I like watching Creighton get up down the court and shoot threes. I like watching UCLA, you know, run and dunk the way UCLA's running and dunking. But I've always sort of like just been able to appreciate, even if the tempo is really, really slow, the execution of a Wisconsin basketball team. And this Wisconsin basketball team, I think, is on another level. They got better athletes than they traditionally have. They're better offensively than they historically are. And I think this could be the one team where that Bo Ryan uses to maybe get rid of some of those stereotypes. You buying that yet?
I hope so.
I hope so, too.
Was with some friends on Saturday night, and it, actually Wisconsin had come up. One of the guys, like, his stepmom's from Wisconsin or whatever, and she's a fan. But it was crazy. Like, when I'm around people, they always want to talk college hoops, and I don't mind doing it. But Wisconsin did come up, and oh, they're boring. They're hard to watch. Like, it is, and these are like casual fans. So from that perspective, not that it means a ton, it is going to take a huge NCAA tournament run playing like they have for Wisconsin to truly shed that image with people that kind of watch the sport here and there, but aren't dialed in. Don't go to KenPom. Don't realize that there's even, you know, someone aside from Sam Decker. They don't know who Frank Kaminsky is. I love watching them. In a way, like, you know, I don't really root for teams or anything like that, but in a way I sometimes do. Like, I'd love to see this Wisconsin team minimally make an Elite Eight with the talent they have, with how good this offense and this defense is. Bo Ryan, obviously tremendously respected within the game, to have started like this, to have the wins that they have. I mean, that Florida win, it's going to keep looking better and better and better and better as we go on. They're going to drop a few in Big Ten play, but I would say the floor is a number three, and that's the floor. Like, projecting however much they would lose going forward in the Big Ten, they're going to be in fine position overall. And yeah, just in general, fun, man. Frank the Tank, he put up what, 43 earlier this year. They're no joke. Travion Jackson's probably fairly underrated at the Big Ten level for what he can do with this team, and they've got a lot of experience. There's what is Decker the youngest guy? I don't have their roster up, but I think
they're playing the freshman now.
They got Nigel Hayes.
Oh yeah, Nigel Hayes. Hayes. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, so
yeah, but he's he's somebody, you know, particularly when you look at a Wisconsin team, like, Bo doesn't usually rely on freshmen. You know, he just doesn't. Yeah. And the idea, so that means, you know, with Nigel, they're getting, you know, a contribution from somewhere that, you know, maybe if you went back to the preseason, you weren't necessarily expecting that to be the case. It's like they got an extra guy, you know.
Oh, yeah, I mean, no. He's averaging like 13.5 over his last five games. It's been a huge boost, and like that, this team's like growing on me. I know that they had, you know, a bunch of pretty good non-conference wins, but, you know, every time I watch them, they're, you know, they're better than I thought. They have more weapons than I thought they had, and, you know, come March, I know they have that stigma about them that, you know, they can't get past the Sweet 16 or they can't beat single digit seeds, but, you know, this is, you know, as you guys have been talking about, this is a different team, and I think this is the year that they're gonna, you know, kind of get rid of some of those doubts that people have about Wisconsin, or some of those preconceived notions they have about Bo Ryan and Wisconsin.
I think we have an interesting, you know, debate, so to speak, between the Big Ten and the Big 12 in terms of at the top. I'm definitely ready and rushing to concede that the Pac-12 is an elite league, or at least it's a top league like I thought it was 3 weeks ago. But nah, between the Big Ten and what Borzella mentioned, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Ohio State, and Iowa, and then you've got the Big 12 with Iowa State, Kansas, Oklahoma State, Baylor. It's really close. It's really cool. I don't think we've ever had the Big 10 and Big 12 match up in the same year with four really, really good teams. And then even if you want to get lower, like the Big 12, K-State was on a 10-game winning streak till they got smacked by Kansas. Oklahoma obviously ended Iowa State's streak. They're going to be a tournament team this year. So turning into a pretty compelling race.
When I was doing my top 30 conference games from last week, like, I would say half of those games came from the Big 12 and Big 10, just because those, I think, you know, are by far the most interesting conference races at the top in the middle of the pack. Like, the ACC's got Syracuse, Duke, Pitt, but, you know, Duke's falling, whatever. But, like, Big Ten and Big 12, every week there's at least two or three games that you're really, really interested in that's going to affect the conference standings.
You know, with the Big 12, what's interesting to me there is that, obviously, it's strong at the top. Kansas is Kansas. Iowa State is, at this point, should be taken seriously as a legitimate top 10, 15 team. Oklahoma State still has Marcus Smart. Kansas State's better than we thought, even if they're not great. Oklahoma's better than we thought, even if they're not great. Baylor's top 30. Like, when they lost schools, right, because of realignment, it dropped them down to a 10-10 league. So the Big 12 only has 10 schools. But that creates a double round robin where you play everybody home and away. And then the other thing it does is, where do you go get wins? Like, you know, like Texas Tech is still top 100 at KenPom, even if they're not great. TCU is terrible. Okay, but outside of that, you know, 80% of the top 80% of the Big 12 is in the top 65 at KenPom. So, like, it becomes just a beast to try to navigate, because there's very few places you can look up and go, okay, yeah, we should go get that one on the road. Like, how many games are even the best teams in the league going to win on the road in this league?
It's not many.
Not many.
To be honest. Like, and that's what we should kind of keep in mind. And I think, in general, college basketball is better at this than college football and pro football in terms of not totally knee-jerking night by night, morning by morning. But it's going to be coming. Like, we're just going to have these teams knocking off each other in most road game situations. So that, I don't think, will affect profiles and reputations too much. But yeah, at this point, the Big Ten and Big 12 most specifically have proven to be the best league. So when these road losses inevitably come, we just kind of need to properly assess that.
I think TCU is pretty much the only one that you could really look at and say, all right, we should probably win there.
Well, at Texas Tech.
But Iowa State, they struggle with Texas Tech. Yeah, like, no. West Virginia went to overtime. They're not saying West Virginia is great, but you know, so I think, like, TCU is the only one that, like, you could really say that's a complete gimme Big 12.
Oklahoma State got out by the skin of their teeth at West Virginia when Markell Brown hit a three with like 9 seconds to go. That probably actually should have been a West Virginia win. Juwan Staten was fouled near the end of that game on Saturday, and they did not call it. So, yeah, when you can, like, when you can leave an arena with even that kind of win, you just kind of breathe a sigh of relief and thankful that you got one, because you know that those breaks normally aren't going to come in a league like the Big 12.
I think basically this is the way it's going to break down. Texas Tech, you should, if you're one of the elite teams.
You should beat them.
No, I got you. I got you. Here's the way I think the odds makers would put it. If you're Kansas, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, you know, Baylor, like that class of the Big 12, I think you should be able to go to TCU and say, we should win there. You should be able to go to Texas Tech and say, we should win there. Outside of that, even if you're one of those top teams, at anywhere else in the league, I think if you go to, so there's nine places you could theoretically go in the league. I think seven of those?
Yeah.
Seven of those places are places where you should probably lose, or you're in a coin flip game. You know, you're in a game that's going to have a 2, 3, 4, 5 point spread on it. And so that's going to be really difficult.
Yeah. So we might have, I mean, honestly, like, the Big 12 winner, first of all, we'll probably have a tie in regular season. I expect we'll have two teams with the same, but I think at best case, like, best is four losses.
14 and four will win it outright. If you go 14 and four in the league, you will win the outright title.
Which is awesome. And, I love when we have round robins that we can, so the Big East obviously also provides that. Just it obviously gives a fair balance across the board, which we don't get in leagues like the ACC and the Pac-12, which oddly saw Oregon not protect its home court. So,
The Big Ten's basically the same way at the bottom. I mean, what are the gimmies in that league? I mean, Northwestern should be, but, you know, they just beat Illinois. Like, Penn State's not a gimme. Nebraska's not a gimme. Purdue's not a gimme. And that's the bottom four of the league.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's strong. That's, to me, like, that's when you start, like, at the SEC, you ought to be able to go on the road and get, you know, some wins at some of those places. Right. But the Big Ten and Big 12, they really set up differently. Norlanda, you made an interesting point that I didn't plan on talking about, but I want to. And that's, you said, hey, I'm sort of rooting for this Wisconsin team. And I know there's some people who out there, they hear comments like that and they go, oh, but you're not supposed to root, or, you know, and that kind of stuff. And in theory, like, I got it, right? We're not supposed to have our pom-poms out for Kansas or UCLA or whoever it is we might have our pom-poms out for. But I actually do root for certain programs or certain teams or certain coaches, and not because I'm buddy buddy with them or whatever. It's always rooted in this. When I root, and really in sports, you know, because I don't have a favorite NFL team or, you know, the NBA. Like, I live in Memphis, so I enjoy them. I know those guys, so I like to see the Grizzlies do well. But, like, you know, if they don't do well, it doesn't affect my emotions in any real way. I don't really have favorite teams like some people have favorite teams, but I root for this. I think this is consistent, whether it's in college football, college basketball, the NFL. I root for people or programs or franchises or whatever, coaches, to shed labels that I think are unfair. I root for that always. So, like, right now in the NFL, there's this, you know, Peyton Manning narrative about he can't get it done in the postseason. Greatest regular season quarterback of all time. He can't get it done in the postseason. And I've seen all the numbers. Like, I know why people think that. But I hate the idea that this guy, who was so brilliant at what he does, could maybe be discounted. His legacy could be discounted if he doesn't get another Super Bowl. So I find myself right now rooting for Peyton Manning because I want him to shed that label. Gonzaga, like last year in the NCAA tournament, I was rooting for them. And not because I love Mark Few, although I do really like Mark Few, but because I hate the idea that every time you rank Gonzaga in the top 10, even if Gonzaga has a resume that's top 10 worthy, people will say, yeah, but they never go to a Final Four. They never get do anything in the NCAA tournament. Jamie Dixon, I think, is a brilliant basketball coach, never been to a Final Four. I root for him to get to a Final Four so that people will stop mentioning to me that he's never been to a Final Four. And this Wisconsin team's the exact same way. I would like to see them go to a Final Four, win a national championship, just so people will stop. Every time I tell somebody Wisconsin's really good, they would stop hitting me back with, but yeah, they're really good, like in the Big Ten, they finish in the top four, but when they get in the NCAA tournament, they always get bounced. So I root for those types of things. Does that make sense to you, Borzello? Are you similar at all?
No, I know exactly what you're saying. I kind of like it just because, I mean, like, you're right. Like, every time you mention something, if you tweet about it, right, you get 50 responses saying, well, you know, they're going to lose in the first round like they always do. And, like, right now you don't really have a comeback for it.
That's the problem, right?
It's a dumb argument because I don't think – but, like, there's really no comeback. You're like, well, I guess they kind of do.
Well, like, sometimes people will – they confuse – like, anybody who doesn't think the Wisconsin program is an unbelievably successful program is just dumb. Like, you could just to finish in the top four every single year under Bo Ryan of the Big Ten, to never slip. I mean, look at Indiana right now. You know, they're slipping. Like, it's Indiana basketball. Everybody slips in college. You know, North Carolina's slipping. Kentucky last slipped. It never happens to Wisconsin. And so to be able to do that is remarkable. To be able to go to the NCAA tournament every year without exception is remarkable. And so it frustrates me when people try to discount what Bo's been able to do there, but you can't argue with the, but he's never been to a Final Four. I think people somehow, they use that as the bar, and perhaps because we all use that as the bar, like, are you a Final Four coach or are you not a Final Four coach? So I get that, but I hate that bar. I hate that that bar is where people decide whether or not somebody's good or bad, whether a program's good or bad. And so if you can cross that bar, I want you to cross that bar so that we can stop having that stupid conversation.
I agree with this sentiment completely. It's also why I kind of, when I quote-unquote root, I root for the best story, which is what pretty much every writer does. They want the best kind of story to tell, and often that'll go hand-in-hand with the elimination of a certain trend or negative narrative against a program or a coach. So I agree with that totally. And by the way, this is not totally related to what we're talking about, but I saw it and I wanted to bring it up before I forgot. Do you guys realize that, speaking of teams slipping, Duke and Carolina are probably not going to be ranked? Now, GP has Duke still in his top 25, which I agree. I still think Duke is a top 25 team. But later today, if they're both not in the polls, the last time that happened, Borzello wasn't even born, and I was 18 months old. It was in December of 82, which it isn't surprising to see that.
4 years before I was born.
Yeah, it's
God, I wish that was 4 years before I was born.
You know, Duke and Carolina have been obviously so good for so long. So the fact that it's been that long isn't surprising, but still, that's pretty remarkable. So I think that'll happen. And Duke fans that want to blame me entirely for this is totally fine because I wrote about how they had gone forever without being in the top 10.
And then didn't you have them as a national champion?
Yeah,
Guys, I am terrible, okay? Even in our reset,
I
put them as the national champs. I am sprinting away from that.
Hey, well, I would have thought that you know, you're a numbers guy, and I'm not saying that as a joke. Like, I'm just saying it as, like, you, like, I actually, I don't know that I would describe myself as a numbers guy, but I look at the numbers 50 times a day, right?
Yeah.
I don't swear by them, but I'm very aware of them. And I would have thought you, Norlander, would have looked at that defensive efficiency rating and just toss Duke out right then.
I know. I don't know why I didn't.
I don't know why you didn't either.
Honestly, you know why I honestly didn't do it? Because I said, you know what, that guy can kind of coach, and I think they've got the best player in college basketball, and I think their depth of wing and guard is good enough to overcome. But they're like Ohio State in that Duke has a fatal flaw. They're going to win more than they're going to lose, but ultimately Ohio State will lose because it simply is not going to put up 76 points in a game that it's going to need to, and Duke is ultimately going to lose, whether it's in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, or if they get to a Final Four, because they're not going to be able to defend within 7 feet of the rim like they should. That is why they will lose. You know, they're a good team. They're not a great team. They're not going to overcome that. They're not winning six games in March because they simply lack that ability on the interior to consistently defend and get defensive boards, and it will be what takes them out.
Borzello, should Duke still be ranked?
I think they should still be ranked, and I wouldn't completely discount a Final Four run from them either. But, you know, you mentioned this in your top 25 and one, you know, introduction. You know, they don't have – really, I mean, they lost to Notre Dame. They lost to Clemson. They don't have any bad home losses. They've beaten Michigan. They beat UCLA. So they have a pretty okay resume and a better wins than most other teams fighting for the 26th or 25th or 24th spot in the ranking. So on the surface, I still think they're a 6 or 7 seed, which would put them at that 24 to 26 range. But you know, I don't think they can win a championship. Just that they like Parker's been struggling lately, and we've seen that. At the beginning of the season, they had a ton of scores on paper. They had Parker, they had Hood, Dawkins, and Suleiman, and everyone. Now, when Parker's not shooting well or Hood's not shooting well, they can't score enough. And combine that with the fact that they can't defend on the interior, they can't defend on the perimeter in terms of on the ball. You know, they have a lot of flaws. I mean, I think they have more than one fatal flaw.
I actually don't think that like they're shooting or scoring, like that ain't a problem for them. It's that they can't stop other people from scoring. And so you almost need Jabari to go out and get 25 right. or Rodney Hood to go out and get, 20 for you to have a chance to beat a good team. Because unless those two but they can't, they've got I think like the top five offense in the country, like maybe second.
Yeah, second. Yeah.
So like they're 96th in defensive efficiency. I mean, they're just and Rodney Hood to me is interesting because like it's funny, like everybody's been on this Jabari Parker train, and I get it because he might be the number one pick in the NBA draft. But like Rodney Hood is basically averaging the same amount of points, shooting better from the field and from 3-point range. Like he's at like if it weren't for Jabari's just presence at Duke, like Rodney Hood would be in a conversation for first team All American. He's just been completely overshadowed by Jabari. It's interesting, like later on today I'll do the poll attacks. Regardless of whether Duke's ranked or not ranked, and I won't poll attack, so to speak, anybody for not ranking Duke. I don't think you have to, like it's obvious. But I went and looked more so on Sunday morning than Sunday night because that's what I do every. I think sometimes people forget that for my purposes, I gotta have 26 teams, and for the AP voter, you gotta have 25 and. And so sometimes people just yell out, oh, that team shouldn't be ranked. And I'm like, really? Well, then fill out a ballot and try to find me somebody better. You know, like I looked at Seth Davis's ballot last night because he tweeted it out. And I think the two teams he had ranked that I don't have ranked are Xavier and Louisiana Tech, which is fine. Whatever. Nothing crazy about either one of those. But Duke has a better body of work than both of those schools. Like they, right. Both of them. They just do. Like if you can get out of your head. Well, they've lost two of their last three, and it's Duke. And so every time – I think that's what happened is that Duke's losses are magnified because it's Duke lost. You know, that's a headline in and of itself. Like, Duke lost to anybody is a headline. Like, Andy Katz, who I think is really good at his job, tweeted the other day after Duke lost at Clemson. He said, this is the most surprising league result of the year. And it just wasn't,
No way.
Like Clemson was like a 4 or 5 point underdog, like maybe a 6 point underdog. Like, right.
They have like one of the 10 best defenses in the country.
Well, like Memphis was an 11-point underdog at Louisville. So like even if you don't even have to go back and think for 3 weeks ago, just like 4 days earlier, you had what was a bigger, at least according to oddsmakers, a bigger surprise in terms of a league result. So I think the idea that Duke lost at Clemson like freaks people out, but. Really, it was just a borderline top 25 team.
Clemson, and people don't realize this because Clemson isn't obviously anywhere near relevant, but they're like a top three defensive team in the country. They allow the fewest points per game. So this was kind of coming for Duke. But the trends were – they were on a collision course. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I expected Duke to win. But for anyone that caught most or all of that game – Duke looked absolutely miserable. Like, as bad a body language from a Duke team as I could ever remember, just completely out of sorts. If it was allowable, I'm sure Krzyzewski would put the entire team in the doghouse for the next game. They don't look anywhere near the team that I saw in November. And I'm sure they'll get back because they're just so talented and Krzyzewski is so good. But this is a notable dip for Duke that will ultimately damage them because they're not going to have any chance at a number one seed, in my opinion. They'd have to run the table at this point. Now, their losses aren't miserable, but I think that the competition at the top tier of college basketball is going to be too good for them to overcome that. And now, by the way, Syracuse, you know, I wrote, they got to feel like they were born on third and thought they got a triple. They walk into the ACC, and it's Pittsburgh, who's at a bad non-con, and nobody else.
Right. So maybe Virginia. Florida State, actually, like last night, as I was preparing myself to have to, counter-argue the people who are yelling at me about Duke not being ranked, because my whole premise is, I get it. If your argument is Duke isn't very good, I got that. Like, I understand. But they're still, you know, one of the best 25, or for my purposes, 26 teams in the country, according to body of work. They are. So I knew that I was going to get some pushback. So I actually started looking at all these different teams and trying to compare and whatever. Florida State's body of work is, like, really close. Like, you could reasonably argue Florida State could be ranked ahead of Duke right now. But the point's the same. It's so weird to say that the ACC title could come down to Syracuse and Pittsburgh. Hey, let's go from Durham to Chapel Hill. I think we'd had a lot of fun over the first couple of months of the season talking about how all over the place North Carolina was. Lose to Belmont, beat Louisville, lose to UAB, beat Michigan State, beat Kentucky, lose to Texas. Now they have finally become consistent, but it is consistently bad. Consecutive losses to Wake Forest, Miami, and then blown out at the Carrier Dome to Syracuse. Has North Carolina finally settled into what it is, or they got another twist in them?
I mean, I think they're going to be a thoroughly mediocre team the rest of the season. I don't think, obviously they're 0-3 now.
Yeah.
I still think they're going to make the NCAA tournament just because they have those three humongous wins.
Yeah.
And if they're on the bubble, that's going to be basically a tiebreaker between whoever they're, you know, compared to. But their body language against Syracuse was awful. You know, they checked out probably 15 minutes into that game. And you knew after that it wasn't going to be close. And you don't usually see that from a team coached by Roy Williams or pretty much any Hall of Famer. I don't think they thought they had a chance to win that game. And after their first barrage of points and then they gave up a big run, you know, it was bad. And I think that's, to me, is more concerning than just going 0-3. It's just I don't believe they thought they could win that game.
Yeah, it's body language analysis Monday, Duke and Carolina. Right. But yes, it's true.
I mean, I hate looking at that stuff, but like they just
They
didn't look
good.
Like they didn't look happy. They didn't.
Yeah,
look...
no, that's totally valid. Like I'm not smashing on that at all. Like I think a lot of times you can look at a team and it just you can clearly see. And by the way, they had 7 garbage points in like the final 90 seconds to tie a franchise or a program low in the shot clock era at 45 points, but they were hanging at 38 there with 2 minutes to go, and that would have been the worst since, you know, the 50s or whatever. Pretty remarkable. I also think they'll make the tournament, and I also was rooting for North Carolina to win every game they shouldn't and lose every game they shouldn't. Like, I want total chaos, but now they're going to have to beat Boston College. They're probably going to lose at Virginia a week from tonight, but who knows? Virginia plays so slow that could be... That could be something of a toss-up, I suppose, but it's hard to see the Cavs dropping a game. And then, by the way, they are 3-0, looking better than they were at certain points. They've had a couple ugly games, but yeah, UNC 0-3. I don't think they've ever started 0-4 in the ACC, and I don't think that'll happen because Boston College is miserable, and that's a home game for Carolina this Saturday. But overall, yeah, they're certainly not looking terrific, and it's looking more and more like they could use a certain fellow who is now, I guess, getting assigned to the D-League later this week.
Yeah. It's interesting. Roy Williams, you know, he's up there in age. He's still got plenty of good years in front of him, I think, if he wants them. But we all know he's an emotional guy, right? But he's starting to say things that suggest, like, he's just drained, you know, and... He's mentioned that the PJ Harrison thing was the toughest thing he's had to go through as a basketball coach. He's mentioned that he's never been frustrated more as a basketball coach than he is this season. And perhaps this is just Roy being emotional Roy, but it does start to, you hear about anytime an older guy starts to just seem mentally drained by the process, you start to wonder if it's going to eat him up, you know?
Like if he didn't have 3 5-star kids coming in next year, I would think maybe this is it for him. But he's got, you know, one of the best recruiting classes in the country, 3 5-star guys, Theo Pinson, Justin Jackson, Joel Berry. And, you know, you're not going to leave when you have that kind of talent coming in. But if those guys weren't coming in, maybe next year will be his last year, you know. But yeah, I agree with you. He doesn't seem enthusiastic about, you know, coaching this team.
Yeah. So after we get off this call, I've got to knock out the player of the week thing. And I understand the logic behind, you know, share the awards and share the recognition. anybody got any idea why I shouldn't give it to Doug McDermott again?
I'm with me. 35
it's
points.
It's got yeah. I mean, I sent you a few names.
Right.
Like there were a few solid performances from guys on smaller teams. Like Billy Barron had a really awesome week. Yeah. Tyler Hawes is now climbing the record books at BYU. Wasn't McDermott like supposed to be injured? Like the guy was ridiculous at home against Xavier, and so no, you should give it to McDermott, and I hope his charge to 3,000 points becomes more of a storyline here in the next couple of months, because he's probably going to get it and be the, I think, 8th player like ever in the history of D1.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty cool. That's pretty special. We talked a little last week about his obviously being a first team All-American 3 times. That's going to happen barring, you know, season ending injury, I suppose. So just really cool that we have this kind of player that can do this and do it in a league now that Creighton's in the Big East, going to be on TV a little more. The team is obviously good enough to be a 3 or 4 seed, you'd think. So give it to the kid. He's just ridiculous and did it. And by the way, they won a nice game over a good Xavier team without Grant Gibbs.
Well, that's the other thing. Okay, so like, okay, you go win at DePaul. That's fine. I mean, you're supposed to do that. But you know, then you come back and play on Sunday a red-hot Xavier team. A Xavier team that had won, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in a row, including wins over a Cincinnati team that's now ranked, or at least should be ranked, an Alabama team that is whatever, a Wake Forest team that knocked out North Carolina. They beat a Butler team that is probably not great, but still Butler's Butler. They beat a Marquette team that's always solid, even if a little down this year. This Xavier team had been rolling. Suddenly you've got Creighton, with Doug seemingly hurt to some degree, and no Grant Gibbs. So, like, Creighton's down a significant player. And yet, you know, I don't want to say Doug put him on his back, because if you watch the game, it didn't really feel like it was Doug McDermott putting somebody on his back. He scores 35 just sort of in the flow of the game. Yeah. There wasn't really anything like I was actually, like, more blown away by Ethan Rogge than I was, like, Doug McDermott. Like, that felt a little weirder than it. And so, you know, I'm just not going to take – I guess this is what – as I was looking at all of the possible candidates late last night, early this morning, I just don't – I don't want to get to the point where we start taking what he's doing for granted. Right. You know, like what he's doing is special. And like Norlander said, going to be – he's on pace. He actually should do it if he keeps this scoring average like at the Big East tournament in Madison Square Garden, which would be terrific. Become that just the 8th player in Division I history to score 3,000 points. And the idea – it'd be, you know, once upon a time, you know, that Tyler Hansborough is one of these guys or what, and I get all that, but Hansborough was always supposed to be one of these guys. This was a dude who was a mid-major recruit and has turned into not just a mid-major player. See, sometimes you get a mid-major recruit who is better than anybody thought, but he's still just a mid-major player putting up big numbers, you know, in a mid-major way. Yeah. This is one of the best, if not the best college basketball player in the country. He's gone from mid-major player, Harrison Barnes, sort of, you know, overshadowed high school teammate, to the best, I think you can reasonably say, college basketball player in the country who is just posting big numbers every, you know, almost every time out. And so I hope people are appreciating it.
And we talked about earlier in the podcast that how, you know, getting rid of, you know, preconceived notions or stigmas. The past few years it's been, oh, well, McDermott plays in the Missouri Valley. I mean, that's not what we say, but that's what right. some fans say around the country, but now he's doing the Big East and he's doing it every night. Like what more can you, is there anything bad you could say about the kid now? Like there's no more like, you know, chinks in his armor kind of thing. I mean, obviously he's got weaknesses, but you know, he can't really do much more.
He could score. Like, listen, here's all I want. When I start looking at honors, All-American honors, you know, midseason Wooden Award list, that kind of stuff, I basically have 2 requirements for you. You got to have good numbers and you got to have good numbers on a good team. Like I don't care. Like TJ Warren right now is posting big numbers, although he didn't over the weekend. But like, you know, NC State fans are like, when are you going to start showing TJ Warren love? Which just drives me crazy. God, I hate, if you want to drive me insane, tweet at me to show somebody some love. I hate what? Where's the love for, you know what? Shut them. Like, what are you talking about love? Like, I'm not even in the business of love. Like, I don't even know what that means. Like, you know, why aren't you showing TJ Warren love? I don't know. I mean, you know, like, I don't even know what that means. It's like, shut up. But beyond that, he's doing it for, I don't want to say a bad basketball team, but not a nationally relevant basketball team. It certainly looked like a bad basketball team over the weekend. So I can sort of like take that and put it over here and say, hey, you know, kid's posting good numbers, but you know, you could take any talented player, put him on a bad team and say, go get me 25 and he can do it. I want to know who's got good numbers or remarkable numbers for a team that's also really good or borderline top 25-ish. And McDermott checks all those boxes. Beyond that, you know, he's now a legitimate NBA prospect as well. Like probably, I don't want to say probably, but possibly a lottery pick in June's NBA draft. So, like, he checks every single box you want to check when you're looking at college basketball players on a winning team, posting crazy numbers, and doing it while establishing himself as an NBA prospect. I just, again, I don't want to be repetitive here, but I hope people aren't discounting him the way they might have over the past couple of years. Because I've always believed he could score in any league in the country. Now he's showing that he can score in any league in the country and also lead a team to nice things in practically any league in the country.
Agreed. I wanted to bring up just a few quick injury-related things. One, Casey Prather was out for Florida, yet Florida won at Arkansas. Almost no one wins at Arkansas. So that was one of those really impressive wins that kind of flew under the radar over the weekend. But good on the Gators to get that kind of W. And then we had two injuries, and we don't know how bad either of them are. We know DeAndre Kane isn't going to be out long-term. It'll be interesting to see if he plays tonight at home against Kansas. Oh man, Iowa State. If he does not play and Iowa State loses to Kansas, those fans are going to lose their mind because they dropped a game last year against the Jayhawks at Hilton that they probably should have won.
Sure.
So just wondering how long and how bad his injury is. And then the one that looks more severe and initial reports and a quote-unquote gut feeling from Tad Boyle is that Spencer Dinwiddie might have really dinged up his knee. And if he's out for a long period, to me that eliminates Colorado from being perceived as a legitimate Sweet 16 team because he's their best player, him and Askia Booker. I think Dinwiddie is more valuable. So those are the two big injury takeaways, news headlines from over the weekend. Looks like Kane should play this weekend. But if Dinwiddie is not good and if he's out until March, that looks like it'll have a big time.
You know, like they haven't ruled DeAndre out for, and again, we are recording this on Monday morning. Iowa State plays Kansas tonight. And they haven't ruled DeAndre Kane out for that game yet. But it's very rare to see somebody leave an arena on crutches and yeah, then play two nights later. Like that just doesn't usually happen. So we'll see. But to me, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie's injury, we do at least know at this point that DeAndre's, you know, nothing's broken, nothing's snapped, nothing. It's just a, can you play with it? You know, can you deal with the pain? Eventually, he's going to be back, and perhaps as soon as tonight. We'll see. Dinwiddie seems a little more serious, at least when you read the quotes from Tad. He's not optimistic about where this is going, and that's just a killer. I know that he's not, Spencer isn't, you know, sort of this household name in college basketball, but he is a household name in college basketball among college basketball followers. Like he's a high
and
level
and mustache followers, by the way, the best mustache in the game.
He's got a terrific mustache. And so he's a, you know, an all Pac-12 player, all American candidate. And if he's not, you know, it's one thing when you lose a power forward or a wing, like I think Kansas would still be good, you know, if Andrew Wiggins just wasn't there. Like I, you know, like it's what, when you lose somebody who handles the ball for you and who is such a key to every single thing that you do, like that's a killer, particularly in like, a league. Yeah, go ahead.
There's few top 25-ish teams that rely on one player as much as Colorado does on Dinwiddie. Not that he averages 30 a game,
no,
but
I got you.
He does everything. He defends, he runs pick and rolls, he scores himself, he gets everyone else involved. Like Josh Scott's having a breakout year, Dinwiddie's finding him open, Askia Booker was bad yesterday after Dinwiddie got hurt. He gets open shots because Dinwiddie's there. So to me, with him out, you know, their entire offensive, you know, system takes a humongous hit. I mean, yeah, there's other guys that can play his position, but you know, to me, he's one of the most dependent on, you know, elite players in college basketball.
All right, we are running long here. So before we wrap this up, I'm actually headed on the road a little later on this week. I got a neat Saturday, Monday a combination in Lawrence, Kansas. I'm going to go got Marcus Smart, Andrew Wiggins game. And I know it's not quite billed that way. They don't play the same position. But still, those will be the faces you see in the in the promos. Marcus Smart, Andrew Wiggins, Saturday at Allen Fieldhouse. And then on that Monday, you get Baylor coming into Allen Fieldhouse. So I'm going to be at both of those. And then in between, I'm going to go over to Wichita and spend that Sunday with Greg Marshall and the Shockers.
Dude, they escaped. We didn't even talk.
Oh, wow. I thought that was over,
that.
Right?
I missed that, by the way. I missed that entirely. I come back to like 10 tweets because I've got this random side bet with the guy who runs the rest of the court. If Wichita State goes undefeated, I have to wear bunny ears at the Final Four, and we'll talk about that if it becomes legitimate. But regardless, so a lot of people are now following Wichita State for this. Did not even realize they were down by like 18 with 10 minutes to go, and they rallied at Missouri State. So yeah, good on Greg Marshall. That's pretty impressive on the road in the Valley. Missouri State is a good team within that league.
Yeah, no, when you come back from 18 down, 10 minutes to play, you know that's impressive by definition. So I'm gonna spend some time with Wichita State, which is, you know, the team. They're not the last undefeated team, obviously, but they are the team most likely to finish the regular season undefeated, given that they play in the, you know, Missouri Valley as opposed to the Pac-12 or the, you know, the Big Ten or whatever. Do you guys? I'm going to see Kansas twice. Are you back on board with Kansas? You think everything's okay at Kansas, or is it still very much a work in progress?
I still think it's a work in progress. I mean, they're absurdly talented, and they're certainly a Final Four threat. I still think they are. They still have a little bit of ways to go. But if you want to say they're the Big 12 favorite,
sure.
You know, obviously that's. I would have no problem with that, just based on what Self's done in the past and their talent level. They're clearly the best four loss team in the country right now, I would say. But I still think they have a little bit of ways to go.
They're coming up on a big moment here. Yeah. I mean, first of all, I love how they're setting themselves up to be a little overlooked with having four losses. By the way, those losses are all quote-unquote legitimate. Sure. But just in time for Bill Self to remind everyone that he is a boss and that you should never, ever, ever doubt him in the Big 12. That's one of those storylines that maybe I oddly root for to keep happening because it's just weird. Like, for a team and a coach to win a power conference for a decade in a row is just stupid. So I'm still on board. Wiggins, by the way, 13 points in a row at one point. Some would discount that given they had a lead. But, hey, K-State, 10 wins in a row, including a couple of really solid wins in there. He looked good. Wayne Selden's been awesome. I'm very much still on board with Kansas as a legitimate Final Four threat. But obviously these next two games, which they get at home, those will be some big time moments for the program, for Wiggins. The sport's going to take more. You know, Saturday there is no NFL football. So college basketball is really going to be on display in maybe the biggest way so far this season across the country. So obviously a big moment for the Jayhawks coming up here.
It should be a fun week and a fun trip for me to Lawrence, Kansas over the weekend. Well, listen, let me wrap this up by telling you guys thank you and letting everybody know. You can follow Matt Norlander and Jeff Borzello on Twitter at Matt Norlander, at Jeff Borzello. They are not difficult to find. I appreciate you guys listening and for reading what we write, for following us on Twitter, interacting with us on Twitter, even if you're one of those people who are constantly
jump
requesting
some love.
Hey, hey, why aren't you showing UMass some love? What are you talking about? That is one of the ones that drives me crazy. Why aren't you or you know what else drives me? Here's the other one that drives me crazy.
So much for wrapping this up.
Yeah, so much for wrapping this up, because now we got another 20 minutes of me just explaining to you what drives me crazy. When people will look at a top 25 and one, and let's say, okay, the one that's up right now at CBSSports.com, I do not have Virginia. When people will look at that, not see Virginia, and then tweet at me, no Virginia? ? Like, God damn it, you just looked at it. You know Virginia's not there. Why are you taking the time to tweet it? Like, if you want to ask me a question, I noticed you don't have Virginia. I'm curious, do you really think Virginia's resume is not as good as, say, Louisville's? Like, that's actually like a reasonable, like, actual question. When you just say no Virginia,
if someone ever says like the no Virginia or no,
oh, I
respond to every one of them with no period. That's it. And then just like,
I don't respond to them. Like, listen, I'm not interested in like wasting everybody's time. You already know there's no Virginia. So what are you trying to do? Confirm with me that there's no Virginia? Like, I've got a secret top 25 and one I'm keeping somewhere else. You're just seeing the fake one. You're just seeing the one without Virginia, but there's actually another one I got over here in my back pocket that's actually got Virginia in it. Like, don't tweet at me. No, oh, no Xavier? Dude, you just looked at it. You know there's no Xavier there. Now, if you want to ask me a question about Xavier, I'll probably ignore it. But if you want to ask it, at least ask me a reason. Why do you – I noticed you don't have Xavier. That seems reasonable on some level. But I'm curious. How could you justify Louisville over Xavier? Okay, let's talk about that then. But just to tweet at me no Xavier or to show some love to Samaje Christian, God, you're making me want to kill you when you do that.
Virginia?
Watch. Like, it happens every single time you update the rankings. Somebody,
I'm going to start tweeting at you that nonstop.
Oh,
anytime you put something out.
It bothers me more than you have
when
you no
pick,
idea.
When you pick Doug McDermott, no Wayne Selden?
Oh, that'll be what it is. Oh, it'll be exactly like that. No Wayne Selden? You know, why aren't you showing Wayne Sutton some love? Oh God, it makes you crazy. Anyway, if you're one of those people, you're making my life stressful.
You're a target for TK.
But let me be clear, I still appreciate you very much because I recognize that if not for people like you, we wouldn't have the jobs that we have. Subscribe to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast at iTunes. It's the quickest way. It's the quickest way to make sure you get the up-to-date podcast. So do that. It's free. And even if you don't, we'll talk again a little later on this week. Take care.